Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brawl in the Family podcast. This is podcast episode 5, the 2013 Bit Fees. And now your hosts, Chris Seward and some other guy.
Hello and welcome back to the Brawl in the Family podcast. We are back and ready to rock.
That we are.
Would you say that was an accurate statement there, Chris?
Yeah. I think last year gave us a lot of games that are, that gives us good reasons to rock.
Oh, yes. Yes, I agree. And on that note, this is a kind of a special episode, as opposed to our previous podcast where we'll have kind of one featured game to talk about. In this one, we are doing our big, star-studded 2013 year in review, where they look back on our favorite Nintendo games from last year.
Indeed.
So, as always, I am your host, Matthew Toronto, and with me is Chris Seward.
Hi there.
And we're gonna get this thing rolling, I guess. So, let's go ahead and get right to it. The Brawl in the Family Podcast Awards for 2013.
Da-da-da-da.
All right, very nice. So, let's go ahead and get started with one of our categories. See, we have separate categories. We will start with best visuals, because that's sort of a commonly looked at kind of thing, I guess. People like to talk about graphics, so including us. So, for this category, I was kind of thinking, you know, you sort of have to split things into two categories, you know, because, I mean, you have the 3DS on one hand, you've got the Wii U on the other hand. Obviously, the Wii U is the HD system and such.
Of course.
But for the 3DS, though, it kind of comes down to, I guess, a few things. I guess there wasn't really one super standout, like, gorgeous game to me for the 3DS, but I think overall I liked Fire Emblem Awakening's visuals.
Hmm. Even better than Zelda's.
Well, Zelda ended up looking a lot better than I thought it would. upon initial reveal, I was kind of like, this sort of looks like new Legend of Zelda. And I'll bring that up a few times throughout this podcast. But I was a little worried at first because everything looks sort of rotund and generic, and I didn't like the way Link looked, you know, compared to Link to the Past. When the game came out, though, I do think that the game was kind of deceptively handsome, because you know, it flowed very well. Like, I think it was 60 frames per second. It controlled super well, and the animations were nice, and it did look very good. But I went with Fire Emblem Awakening in the end for my visual category, kind of for a combination of art and functionality. And to explain that, I think that Fire Emblem has these characters, you know, it's got like 40 or so playable characters, and it's got to have each of them look distinctive in three different styles, which is the hand-drawn giant, you know, 2D sprite, the in-battle 3D polygon, you know, model, and of course the tiny little 2D sprite on the map itself.
Right.
And I think that's no small task to take these elements and to take these art design features of a character and be able to translate them so well onto the small screen to make everything look really clear and really concise while still being, you know, while still capturing the elements of those characters.
They did that very well. I think the one thing about the art design that I don't know about complain about, but do you notice how small everyone's legs are? I mean, geez.
Yeah, everyone brings up the feet thing. They're so tiny.
They are.
They look like little peg legs.
Which is fine, you know, but I mean, I know it's the style the game's going with, and the game does look fantastic.
It is somewhat questionable. I guess I'm kind of used to that thing after playing games like Wind Waker, where, you know, people did have those stubby little legs, and like, I think Bravely Default is a more recent example, where it's kind of a little bit based in that kind of chibi sort of thing. But yeah, with Fire Emblem Awakening, I guess the proportions were more realistic in general, so it looked a little weird having those stubby toes.
Yeah, in Wind Waker, everyone's body has, you know, a unique shape to it, but in Fire Emblem, it looked like the upper torso is kind of realistic, sort of, and then they just kind of shrunk the legs a bit.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That was definitely an art design quirk, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, it is a beautiful game. I think I would agree with you that was probably the best looking 3DS game of last year. I thought Zelda looked really fantastic most of the time, but particularly in the cutscenes, you could really see a lot of the shortcomings of the visuals. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they should have like had a slightly nicer models for when, you know, they went into the zoom in for the cutscenes or something, but it was acceptable, but overall, I think Fire Emblem is definitely the best looking 3DS game.
All right, well, cool. Now moving on to the Wii U visuals, we had a few games come out this year that they look pretty nice, you know, and Nintendo finally has embraced the HD generation at this point.
Yeah.
And it gave them some difficulty. I think Pikmin 3 was actually delayed for quite a while because they were trying to get the feel for that down. But between there's Pikmin 3 and there was Super Mario 3D World was also a really nice looking game.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the year, I think, well, we had Game & Wario, but I don't think that was particularly lovely.
Hey, as far as I really enjoyed Game & Wario. Maybe we'll get into that later. Maybe not for the best graphics category.
But... I mean, visually speaking, you know, it's very very similar to the WarioWare, you know, quirky style, which has its charm.
Yeah.
But for me, I think the winner of the Wii U visuals has got to be Pikmin 3.
Yeah, I think there's really no question about that. Everything from the fruit to the juice to the juice. I know, just the way the juice pours into the little capsules is just—it's
like sloshes around it and mixes a little.
Makes
bit.
You want to drink it.
Yeah, it's definitely made me want to eat a lot more fruit, you know. And I think that's pretty impressive. That's some good looking fruit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Beyond that, I really like the way the water effects look are just fantastic. Like especially when it's raining. Everything has this sort of slick sheen to it, and yeah. It looks like super convincing. I've never really seen that kind of effect in a Nintendo game before, and I think the lighting also works really well with that. Like when you're using the target, like the pointer thing, you're looking around and the light's kind of reflecting off all these surfaces and stuff. I think it's some sort of new lighting engine they're doing too. But yeah, Pikmin 3 definitely ended up looking really nice. So I liked it.
What I was actually considering... See, I didn't consider each of these categories before we started. And for the best graphics, I actually might consider Luigi's Mansion.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, you know what? I actually... I forgot about that. All right. So let's talk about Luigi's Mansion's visuals. Because that was actually something that came close for me for best visuals on the 3DS.
Yeah, I thought it was a very... Visually, it was very complete. There wasn't really any part of it that stood out to me as being lacking, or it took the visual style of the original GameCube game and it kind of put it really to every possible test. It has this really well realized world. All the rooms look very they're full of character and lots of things to find. Like how you can really manipulate a lot of the things in the rooms to like look under them or, you know, pull them aside. Or find the secrets, and the ghost had a lot of character. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I might like the designs better in the original, but I mean, we can discuss more about the game after the visuals, I suppose. But
yeah, I think what Dark Moon did really well regarding its kind of comparison to the first one was it sort of gave a little more personality to everyone, especially Luigi. I think they did a good job. Kind of fleshing out Luigi a little bit and having him react really, you know, realistically and kind of funny to everything. Yeah. And like you said, the ghost, there weren't like a lot of different ghost enemies, but they got a lot of mileage out of those, like the green ones, because, you know, there'll be like one showering or there'll be one fighting you with a rolling pin or something. They kind of do these kooky little, like Disney Haunted Mansion kind of, activities, you know, that are sort of silly and like, have a lot of personality. So yeah, that was something that I think Next Level Games really knows how to deliver characters with a lot of personality through their animations. I think that's one of their
absolutely
strengths.
And that's why I'd love to see them come back and do another Punch-Out game, or heck, any other game. I would look forward to
Punch-Out!
Seeing from them.
Yeah, I've been wanting a sequel to Punch-Out ever since the Wii one came out. I still play through that like every year.
It's a great game.
Not
just from a graphics standpoint, we don't have to really get into it, but I think the only thing it could have used was maybe like a time attack mode or something.
Oh yeah, that would have been cool. They do keep track of your best times for each individual boxer, but Yeah, a few more little challenges would have been nice, but yeah, I'd love to see another punch out. Very addictive.
So yeah, I'm not sure I would like change my decision from Fire Emblem, but I think Luigi's Mansion is certainly up there.
Yeah, it deserves a special mention. I think for sure. Yeah. I almost forgot about that, so I'm glad you reminded me there. All right, so those are visuals. Let's talk about the music now. The music, the sound, the music of games. So, to me, it comes down between kind of two obvious choices. On the one hand, we have Mario 3D World, which is basically done by Koji Kondo, and the incomparable Mr.
Yokota!
Thank you! Shoot, I was drawing a blank there. I was going through my library of Japanese Nintendo, geniuses.
There's quite a few, yes.
Yeah, so, Mr. Yokota, he's the guy that did the Galaxy soundtracks. So, you know, another soundtrack from him. What could go wrong? And on the other hand, we have Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, which has been handled by someone that's not as well-known, but also worked on the Galaxy 2 soundtrack. Some of my favorite tracks from that game, actually. Let me actually pull up his name real quick, because I do not remember it, and I want to give credit where credit is due. But it really comes between those two games for me. So, Chris, how about you talk about Zelda while I look this guy up?
No problem. Zelda is clearly my favorite soundtrack of the year. It recalls a lot of tunes from Link to the Past, which at first might sound a little off-putting. Certainly the concern was that it would rely too much on what Link to the Past did and not really grow into its own, but I think it really did. It surpassed all expectations by putting new spins on old themes. For example, each dungeon technically has the same melody, but the way that they remix it and... the way that it is arranged in each dungeon feels very unique and very characteristic of that dungeon, which is just one example of how it takes the familiar and makes it new again, which it did in a lot of ways. I mean, the overworld, which initially I know you were concerned about it being too similar to Link to the Past, it managed to make it unique and really make it its own, and it did that with the music as well. And the new songs were great too. I think the quality of the sound was definitely a step up from, like, you know, Ocarina of Time 3D, which was a little disappointing to me. I was hoping they would have done more to remake that soundtrack.
Yeah, to actually to interject for one moment there about that. That is something that kind of bothers me. I think Kondo wanted to rework the soundtrack along with the visuals, because the visuals were being reworked. After he remixed a few songs, I think Aonuma was the one that told him that, people aren't nostalgic for this. They're going to want the old soundtrack again. So he had to actually go back and redo everything to make it sound like the Nintendo 64 game, which is like a step backwards to me.
That's a shame.
I don't understand why they feel that the visuals should be improved, obviously, but not the music. No. I'm not saying change the songs. I'm saying use better instruments for these classic songs. And as A Link Between Worlds has shown us, that can have amazing effects because the soundtrack is just phenomenal. Like, what I really loved in the game was that you had a few different overworld themes. There was kind of a starting overworld theme at the very beginning. Then you get kind of the main one, it sounds really good and all, and it has, like, a new bridge and stuff. But then after you get the Master Sword, this really triumphant...
It just kicks it up
on us, this really triumphant song suddenly bursts in for the rest of the game, and it's like, oh man, this is awesome, It really kind of helps drive the narrative, in addition to being really well mixed. So I have the composer up. The guy's name is Ryo Nagamatsu, and he actually worked on some songs from Galaxy 2 and Mario Kart Wii, actually. So I hope to actually hear him more, because he did some great stuff with Kondo's Foundation.
Totally. I love the work he did in the game. The game has a great soundtrack, and I'm personally really excited to have... him and Yokota kind of leading the new charge of Nintendo soundtracks, because I personally felt that they kind of I don't know if they were relying on Kondo's greatness too much or what, but I think the overall memorability of Nintendo soundtracks for a few years there had kind of dipped. And I really like that these new composers are being given the workload they deserve, and I hope we see more from them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, I guess with that said, I kind of messed up with the suspense by doing Zelda first, but Zelda is my best music of the year. But to be fair, 3D World did a lot of stuff that I really liked with the songs. They weren't quite as iconic, I think, as Galaxies. I don't think they stick in my mind as well.
Yeah.
But for what they are, they're really well done. He uses this sort of a jazz band kind of arrangement for a lot of them.
Right.
Which feels really good. You know, it reminds me of some of the Galaxy 2 songs. But, you know, more importantly, I think it feels a lot less generic than, like, the new Super Mario Brothers series of songs. It's just more musically complex, it's live.
Yeah.
And, you know, it feels like there's some passion behind the music, you know? People are playing it.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard a bit of it. I haven't really played the game very much, but I've heard a bit of the soundtrack online, and I would agree with that sentiment. I certainly felt that most of the new Super Mario Brothers games, their soundtracks felt a little bit derivative of, you know, what we know to be Mario music. Like, someone's had to sit down and say, oh, well, I just gotta make some new Mario music here. And just kind of take... So it never really felt inspired or unique.
It's a little phoned in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'll agree there.
Yeah, even like Mario 3D Land, which I did enjoy, but the music was good, but it still had that feel to it that, you know, to me anyway.
Yeah, well, I think 3D World definitely improves on 3D Land's soundtrack.
Yeah, I would agree.
But I would also say 3D Land's soundtrack improves on the new Super Mario Brothers soundtrack.
Well, I think that's kind of a tricky thing for games to do when they want to draw on the popularity of something like the franchise, but still try to make something new. Like, for example, if you look at Luigi's Mansion, I think the soundtrack, it tried to kind of spin off of the original themes, and I think it ended up feeling kind of repetitive and didn't really... I don't know. I don't know if there wasn't enough original tracks to keep me interested or what, because
At first
I really liked the sound of it, but I started hearing the same things over and over. And if I'm honestly not recalling too clearly, but I think the main theme of the game is technically different than Luigi's Mansion, the first one, but it just feels very similar. It's like they took the original theme and just kind of tweaked a little bit and then called it the new theme.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Luigi's Mansion, I think, is one of those Nintendo games that, that has, like, a, you know, this one central theme, and they sort of remix it in the various levels.
Yeah.
Which is not completely new for the Mario series. It actually started with Mario World, I think. But I think Mario World's remixes were generally a little more varied. Like, you have the dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, but then, you know, like, when you go to the castle, it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, it feels different, you know. I really like that castle theme. But,
totally.
Yeah, Sunshine did something similar with the, it had a few levels that had kind of variation on that. But, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It does feel a little too similar to the previous theme to stand out on its own, you know.
Yeah,
and yeah, I feel that way with the new Super Mario Brothers soundtracks in general. I mean, like, who can hum the desert theme from New Super Mario Brothers? So
not I.
Yeah. All right. So I guess from what you've heard, you would say Link Between Worlds as well.
I would.
Okay. Cool. Well, quick shout out. Animal Crossing has a nice, pleasant soundtrack as always.
Yeah, it does.
The you know, they use some of the themes from the first game, like with the KK songs. But those have always been really enjoyable to me. And the new like hourly themes, I'm really liking a lot of them. So, you know, Animal Crossing is kind of always pleasant and adds a nice little atmosphere with its music. And
that's true. I'm not sure. The one thing I would say is that I'm not sure I like the sound effect for when you find something, as like, you know, you dig up a fossil.
Oh yeah.
In the old ones, it's like, whatever. I always like that.
Wait, so what was the new one then? I'm trying to remember now.
See, it's not as memorable. It's that was brilliant. We should find the new one and like paste it in here. It's just not as.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. So there's the new sound effect. It is not the same as the from the past.
Right.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. Well, that did not occur to me. But yeah, now that you mention it, that's weird that they changed that. Oh, and Fire Emblem also had it was kind of first Fire Emblem, so I wasn't really super familiar with the soundtrack, like, well, with the soundtrack of the series, But I enjoyed a lot of the songs from that. They don't quite stick out to me like a ton, but there were still some standouts. I thought, like, actually the last chapter had a really cool song. Oh, man, it was cool. And the rest of the game was good, too. So, all right, so there's our music. Let's talk multiplayer now.
Ooh. Multiplayer.
Yeah, I have a best multiplayer category here, but I haven't played what I feel is going to be Chris's best multiplayer Nintendo game. So I'll quickly go through mine. I thought Pikmin 3 was actually my winner. It came between Pikmin 3 and Mario 3D World, but I think Mario 3D World didn't quite grab my friends and family the way I guess even the new Super Mario Brothers games did. I think that extra dimension doesn't lend itself quite as well to platforming, I guess. Maybe I just wasn't playing with the right group of people, but you know, we could only do about a world of that before, you know, people were ready feeling pretty done with it.
That's kind of a shame.
Which is, you know, you have to find the right group of people to play Pikmin 3 with as well. I mean, it's a two-player game, but if you find someone that's, you know, that's good at Pikmin, it's really enjoyable to do the bingo battle mode, which is kind of a variation on Pikmin 2's really excellent multiplayer mode that I love to play with my brother a lot. It's really well-balanced, it's really creative, and there's a lot of different environments. And in addition to that, you have the mission mode, which is a co-op one, and I've had a lot of good times trying to get the really difficult platinum medals by playing that. You know, they keep track of the ones you get as a one player and the one you get with a friend. The ones you get with a friend. Mm-hmm. So I've had a lot of fun playing that with my friend Ryan and with my sister-in-law. Actually, Mari was helping me get platinums, you know? Like, you lose by just a little bit, and you're like, okay, here's what we got to do. We got to do this, this, this. So you work together, and you kind of formulate this whole strategy. You switching captains and stuff. It's like, all right, go bring this yellow to this thing. Go bring this guy to this guy. And it just works really well. It's fun to work together and try to achieve something that's very challenging to do. You know, it feels like it's bringing people together.
That's what good multiplayer games do.
Yeah. Or tear them apart in the case of Mario Party. That's always fun.
I love that game.
Mario Party's good.
As long as people can you know, appreciate the breaking of friendships as just a fun time activity, then
right.
It's a great game.
Yeah. So how about you, Chris? What multiplayer game are you just dying to tell us about?
Well, Matthew, that would be Game and Wario.
Game and Wario.
Yes, it's, in my opinion, it is a very underappreciated game. It's pretty brilliant. I think if it had twice as many minigames as it does, it would be a AAA title.
Nice.
It's just a really creative game. I think it makes really innovative use of the Wiimote, the Wii U gamepad. And in a way that, unfortunately, I haven't seen enough games do. I'd love to see more creative use of it, because as it shows, you can have a simple game. A really simple game, like I don't recall the name, but the one where, you know, the featured multiplayer game in Game & Wario is the one where the one player is the spy, and they control the spy in a little in a scene that's populated by many similar looking characters, and their goal is to collect a number of fruit that are scattered throughout the level, and the other four players have to try to identify who that player is, so they have to pick him out of the group of, you know, like 100 different characters on the screen. So, it's just very, you get to try to, you have to mask your movements to blend in with the crowd and you know, try to distract the other players from who you actually are.
Oh, so the players are watching, like, the fruit on the screen, and they're seeing all these people move around, and all of a sudden the fruit will disappear.
Exactly.
You grabbed it. Yep. Yeah. I think we played this at E3, right?
We did. It's a really fun, and there's like, there's like three different, stages for it. I think each stage has like a little mechanic that makes it a little different. Like one has like a pool that constantly swirls around. One has these little manhole covers where you can pop from one to the other really quickly. So there's different ways for the spy to hide himself. But there's also every once in a while there's this little snapshot that goes on the screen that says that the spy is somewhere in that snapshot. So that'll get the other players looking there and thinking, okay, which one is it? Which one am I going to follow? You know, which one am I looking at? So it's just a lot of interesting mechanics that you can't really do without the Wii U gamepad. And that's just one example of the creative things that the game does. Unfortunately, there's not enough games like that. not enough minigames. There's really only a few, like, I think it's only three multiplayer games in, three or four multiplayer games in Game & Wario. Most of them are single player, which are actually still fun to simply play in a group and pass the controller around. They're all pretty unique and interesting. Like, there's this, like, puzzle game. You're essentially just putting together these little patterns into a puzzle, but there's like a lot of, there's dozens, maybe 100 different puzzles you can do. So, you know, there's a good variety in some of them.
And there's like a Pictionary kind of game too, right?
Yeah, that's a fun multiplayer one too. So one person has the Wii controller, the Wii U pad, and they're drawing on it. It's like, it's essentially Pictionary.
Yeah, I like that because, you know, you can't really do that with just a regular controller. You can't draw on it, so...
Yeah, and cool. The word bank is pretty good, too. It's better than those Nintendo word banks that we used on, what's that website?
iSketch.
Yeah.
Oh, man, they had some weird ones. They had, like, Crash in the Bowl.
I know. It's like, where do they get these things? But at least... But the one in Game of Wario has, it has some funny words. It has some... Pretty much all the words it has are ones that you can actually draw, so...
Are they like Nintendo stuff?
I think some of them are, but some aren't.
Oh, okay.
And you can't really choose a word bank. There's just a pretty good sized bank of words that it just provides you with. And the music in the game is actually pretty good. It's kind of kooky and bizarre, but the tone of the game.
That sounds about
right.
The
tone of the game is what you'd expect from a Wario game. I think there's. I don't know, there's might be one or two minigames that, you know, you won't really go back to, but most of them have pretty good replayability. I think if you can pick up the game for, you know, a reasonable price, it's certainly worth it. I mean, if you can get it for $20, I'd say it's easily worth the investment. It's one of the best times that I've had on the Wii U.
Well, cool. I always enjoy hearing about kind of these underdog games, so I'll keep my eye out for it. I think Game & Wario, when it came out, I guess it didn't do, like, spectacularly or anything, which is kind of a shame. I feel kind of guilty for not picking it up because I'm kind of one of those people that keeps saying Nintendo needs to do more with the gamepad. And with that said, like, Nintendo Land is still one of my favorite games on the system.
Yeah, which is funny because that's like the Wii Sports of the Wii U, you know? It's the game that's supposed to show everyone how it's done. Hey, here's all the different ways you can use the controller. And yet, so few other developers have really done anything interesting. There have been a few, actually. There was the Deus Ex director's cut of the new Deus Ex game on the Wii U, mm-hmm. and apparently it's really good. They actually made good use of the controller and, like, to hack terminals and stuff. They added new content. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think it sold that well, but I think that's an example of what I would like to see.
Yeah, that's a good way to do, like, an enhanced port kind of thing. And I still hear people swear by Wonderful 101.
Oh, I haven't played that still. Oh, well, I think we played it at E3 briefly, but...
Yeah, I kind of wish I'd been able to it just came out at a time when I was really busy, and I could not get around to it. I'd like to one day, because I still hear people just talk about how much they love it.
Yeah.
And it uses the gamepad, so...
So what's not to like? Cool.
What's not to like? All right, so that's our multiplayer. Let's go on to... Let's go into kind of a quick one. This would probably doesn't require too much discussion, but longest time spent playing. This is easier to keep track of these days because both the 3DS and the Wii U keep track of, you know, how long you spend playing each game. According to my 3DS, I have spent the second longest time this year playing Fire Emblem Awakening.
Oh.
And, I guess the reason for that is because I think I restarted the game right when I beat it. I played it again on hard. I was like, I like that. Let's do it again. So I played it again on hard. I haven't beaten it on hard yet because it took me a lot longer to do a perfect run, which is, well, I don't know if that's what it's called, but I'm trying to not have anyone die.
Right.
So I've been restarting if I lose a character. I'm enjoying it. You could do all these... You could reclass people into different things. I'm trying out characters and relationships I didn't try out the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got good replayability. It's really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Haven't touched Lunatic mode yet, though. I hear that's
gotta be insane.
I hear it's just brutal. So maybe one day. You know? But
personally, I love Fire Emblem. But for anyone who's not a masochist, you shouldn't even go to hard mode. Like, you should just stay in the normal mode and just play it. You know, to enjoy the story and the characters. And it's right. just once you go to the higher difficulties, it's really asking a lot from you to really plan out all your moves and, you know, be really thoughtful.
It's demanding. Yeah. It's demanding for sure.
Which is really cool, but it's just, it's not for the faint of heart.
Right, right. I mean, maybe if you don't mind losing a few guys every.
Well, yeah, but who does? Nobody wants to do that. Like, yeah, if I lose a guy, I'm just like, oh, I gotta reset now.
Yeah.
So
I like him. So like my number one longest time spent playing goes to Animal Crossing. I don't think that's much of a surprise. Animal Crossing is one of those games that you gotta get all the stuff and it takes a long time. I think this Animal Crossing I think it improved on the running out of things to do very early in the game kind of thing. Like, they portion out your upgrades for a few weeks, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely true.
I think this frustrated some players, because you would run out of stuff to do, like, after a couple hours early on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't mind it. I was like, okay, you know, they're giving you a little bit at a time. And most of the stuff they portion out is new stuff, so it doesn't feel like you're missing out on huge chunks of the core... Animal Crossing experience. But, you know, as always with Animal Crossing, it sort of, I lose interest in it after a little while, but, I got a good 100-something hours out of it.
Wow. So. I can't say the same for myself. I played it for a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Maybe about a month. But it just wore thin for me quickly. On one hand, I'd say it's probably the best Animal Crossing game. I actually completely agree with you that they did portion out the... they staggered the release of, you know, the new buildings that open up and the new things you can do pretty well.
Yeah, I think it added a lot more than City Folk did, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And from that perspective, it makes the progression feel much more natural and you're always, you know, looking forward to whatever new's going to happen. But I definitely still felt... kind of burnt out. The impulse to just collect things and design things for me is not that strong. I've played at this point in my gaming career, I'm kind of burnt out on collecting for the sake of collecting. If I can still enjoy a well-designed collecting game, look at Banjo-Kazooie, I could play that and enjoy it. Because it's really based around the collecting as a core gameplay mechanic, like, you know, finding the jiggies and
right, it's the jiggy is more of like an end towards doing something interesting.
Yeah, but just collecting things for the sake of collecting things, I can't really excite myself for that anymore, really, so maybe it's...
Yeah, I can kind of understand that.
I think, at least in part, it's just me being a little bit jaded as a gamer, maybe, but but it is a very good game. If you haven't played an Animal Crossing before, you can probably lose a lot of time playing this one. I like a lot of the additional customization that they added. Like, you can add a lot of just character to your own town if you put the time in that you couldn't in previous games. I played a bunch with my friends on the island. Like, there's all the mini games that are pretty fun for a while. They're a little bit exploitable. Like, in terms of getting a lot of bells, you can just go to the island and get tons.
Oh,
of bells.
I forgot about that. The island is a little too powerful, I think.
Yeah, it does kind of break the economy. Like,
those crazy scarab beetles are everywhere.
Yeah. You can just farm those beetles for hours and make infinite money, essentially. But that's okay, I guess. But I don't know. Just for me, the game lasted a few weeks and it was nice, but I wouldn't not recommend it. It's definitely a good game.
Right. Well, I mean, you say it lasted for a month, and I think that's something. You know, it kept you interested for that long, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Animal Crossing actually is one of the best-selling 3DS games. I hear 18% of 3DS owners have Animal Crossing.
Yeah, 7 million copies sold so far, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty high. pretty impressive. But yeah, I think I agree with you where it's sort of, after a while, it starts to feel like a little bit of a chore just to get new things, where it's not all that rewarding. And it's interesting that you bring up that element, because I think one of the elements for games that I used to really be into, but I'm not anymore, is actually in like customization and editing things, like building your own stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big thing, reason why I've never gotten into Minecraft, because at this point in my life, I feel like if I'm spending a lot of time building something huge or grandiose, or in the case of like Guitar Hero, learning how to play this song, like super hard song, so well that I can do it, you know, without, you know, messing up or whatever, which would take hours and hours, I should be spending that in building something real or designing a real town, or developing a real town, you know. So it kind of straddles the line between fun and work, I guess, at a certain point. I'm not really sure where I stand on that when it comes to certain aspects in games, I guess.
I'm not sure either. I think, at least in part, that sort of mechanic is geared towards younger players, perhaps, just from the perspective that, you know, they haven't really had that experience before, and I think it's easy for someone to get into the... I think the whole collecting or skill-building appeal of games like that appeals to something innate within us to, like, want to, you know, build something and to increase your aptitude at something. It's just this vague instinct we all have, I think, that it really speaks to.
Yeah. It's a little weird to me, though, because I like really hard games. Like, I like really hard platformers. Yeah. But at the same time, I don't know. Just for, I guess for some genres, I don't feel like putting in the effort to develop, like, a skill that would take, I don't know, like, a lot of hours and not enjoy it.
To me, that might be because, like, a tough platformer really has, it'll have clever levels and it'll have mechanics that take some skill to master. And getting through a level really requires you to just think it out well and, you know, time your jumps well and that sort of thing. It's not really going to require you to, you know, do that same level 1,000 times to get good at it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm still compelled to get shiny golds in Donkey Kong Country, so which is the time trial mode in both Returns and Tropical Freeze. That is really, like, the shiny golds are meant for, like, just people that do these runs basically flawlessly. So it is a mystery. I do not know myself.
I couldn't tell you. I mean, I think it's definitely a mature perspective to say, you know, well, why would I, you know, make this big level on Minecraft if I could just, you know, go make something, make a game or something.
Make a game.
But I don't know. At least for some people, it's probably a release. Like, maybe, you know, you work all day at your job and you come home and you just want to expend some creative energy in some easy way. And Minecraft is something you could do that.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't understand the appeal of it. I mean, I can definitely see the appeal. Yeah. I feel like the older I get, the less that aspect of games appeals to me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, that was supposed to be a short category, but we got into existentialism, so that was fun.
Wait, what was that category again?
Oh, that was longest time spent playing.
Oh, I'll briefly go over mine. Oh, okay. I think probably my second most was probably either Fire Emblem or... Animal Crossing. I didn't actually beat Fire Emblem. I got pretty far in it, and I really enjoyed it, so I certainly intend to finish it.
Okay. What was your number one, then?
Oh, easily Zelda.
Yeah.
I actually, as soon as I finished it, I started it again on Hero Mode.
Yeah, me too. That's always a good sign. I did that twice this year.
Yeah, it's a great game. It has a lot of replayability. I think the puzzles are really good. The world is fun to explore, even though I played Link to the Past plenty of times, and I know what the world looks like, it's still... that's just, I love the open-endedness to it. I love, that it's such a nice departure from previous Zeldas in that it lets you kind of do your own thing and it doesn't, you know, keep holding you up with these long cutscenes or anything.
Yeah.
So, it just kept me playing, and I'm sure I'll go back and play it again sometime soon. And, it's a really good game. I will say, if I can mention a non-Nintendo game, The game that I played the most last year was probably Dota 2. I will just throw that in there.
Dota, yeah, you've mentioned the Dota before. That's kind of it's been a popular game over the past year or so.
It's really easy to sink a few hours in here and there. And there's a lot of replayability to that game. Just I think based on the depth of the competitive gameplay.
Yeah, that's typically what does it to make games last a while, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, Dota 2 is your big non-Nintendo
it's
that time sync.
I would say so, yes.
Cool. All right, well, we are almost done with our categories, but before we go into our final two, let's go to most anticipated. For number three, I put Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. When was this list made? Yeah, I am looking forward to playing through Tropical Freeze and beating it 2 days ago. So, yeah, I already played that. It was excellent, by the way. I think I'd actually like to do a future podcast about the Kong and just, yeah. Like, I don't know, maybe the whole Donkey Kong Country series even. Mm. I think it's definitely a series worth talking about. My number two is number nine. Mighty number nine, that is. because it's, I don't know, actually they just released a video of it. It's looking really good. I helped fund the Kickstarter. I love Mega Man. I love what Inafune does. So game looks exciting, really good. And I guess everyone probably saw it coming, but my number one is Super Smash Bros. 4, Wii U, and 3DS. Mostly the Wii U one. But, I love the Smash Brothers games. You know, I always am very anticipatory for the next installment and the characters that'll make it in. Speaking of which, how about that Little Mac?
I'm really excited about Little Mac. He's a great addition. I think he makes up for the fact that Lucario is coming back.
Oh man, I'm gonna get some comments for that.
Yeah, he's gonna be great. I'm really looking forward to playing as him.
Yeah, Little Mac's kind of long overdue, I think. Interestingly, I was reading an article that was the Japanese fans' reactions to Little Mac, and half of them didn't know who he was.
Yeah,
you know, and a few guys are like, "Oh, cool," and then you know, another quarter or so were like, "Oh, this is horrible. Why are you putting this guy in, Sakurai?" So, just to, you know, let you know that the Japanese fans are just like us. they overreact and they kind of freak out about things, so that's cool. What's funny about Little Mac is I always thought King Hippo would be a better Smash Brothers fighter because he's got a little more personality, but after seeing Little Mac in action, I kind of feel like, you know, this is good. He's got a nice, like, he's not too wacky or anything,
yeah.
But he's got this nice sort of design element in place. Like, it's clear that he's like this really kind of brutal and fast pugilist, which I think is really cool. And the trailer and Sakurai's comments made it a point to say that he's not very good in the air, but he's really good on the ground. And we haven't had a character like that either. So I definitely am excited for him, and I love the Punch-Out series. So I think he's earned his spot on this roster.
Absolutely, I agree.
Okay, so anything you're looking forward to this year, Chris?
Yes, there are a few things. One of which would be X, the new Monolith Soft game. I think that looks really interesting. I wasn't able to play Xenoblade.
Xenoblade, right?
Yeah, I looked to get it, but you know they're all really expensive now, so yeah. Didn't happen. But I think it looks like a really cool game. I would love to play that. I think Yarn Yoshi could be pretty fun. I really enjoyed Kirby's Epic Yarn, and I could certainly do with another game in that vein.
Yeah, Goodfeel Goodfeel's the company that's doing both.
Yeah,
I think they do good work.
I agree.
Work.
And I'd also say Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem.
Oh yeah, that looks. I don't know what to expect with that, but
I don't either.
I'm
but,
game.
That's
you know,
two,
why not?
Two franchises that I like. I'd love to see what they're gonna do. And of course, Smash Brothers. Yeah, sure, but. and Zelda. I mean, maybe we're gonna see Zelda this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming at some point for sure.
It probably won't come out,
it won't
this,
come
year,
out this year, but it's on its way.
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty solid list of games that's coming out this
and
year.
And in 2 months, we get Mario Kart, and that's going to be good, too.
I'm
kind of hoping they expand a little bit on the one player. I mean, I'm not holding my breath for it, but it would be nice if we did something more than just the Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the real appeal of Mario Kart by this point has become the online multi. So as long as that works really well, you know, I'll be sure to get it right away.
I would also say Bayonetta 2 could be a pretty fun game. I'm not sure. I haven't played the first one, but I've played games like it, like, you know, Devil May Cry or Ninja Gaiden. And I've
Some, kind of the action third-person high-octane sort of over-the-top game, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty exciting. As long as the gameplay is solid, I think it could be a pretty fun game.
Yeah, Xenoblade is a strong title. I really need to beat it. I played about 30 hours of it and kind of got distracted by, I think, Pikmin 3 or something came out, which tends to happen when I play long games. But, yeah, it's a really popular game, and, yeah, it does a lot of things really well. So, cool game. All right, before I go into the very last couple of things, I want to make a quick shout-out to SteamWorld Dig, which is a 2013 game, but I only just got it this week, so it's pretty timely. It didn't actually crack any of my actual categories, although if I had a best downloadable title, it would probably be that, because it's nice and short and sweet, and it's a really creative idea, and it's a nice twist on the Metroid formula. It's a Metroid game that doesn't really feel like a Metroid game. It kind of feels like it's doing its own thing.
That's cool. I haven't played it.
I actually started a new game right after I beat it.
Wow.
Going for a quicker time. Yeah. So, really cool game. Finally, let's go into our basically the equivalent of the why did they do that for our awards.
Okay.
Biggest disappointment. All right. Should I go or should you go?
I'll go first.
Man, I want you to just tear into these games.
All right, I got a couple.
Oh, boy.
The main Nintendo game I was disappointed with...
Wait, hang on.
What?
You got to go from the bottom. Right? Oh. Like, the Nintendo game you were least disappointed with.
Oh, okay. Well, the Nintendo game I was...
Oh, wait, well, not overall.
Oh, well, Zelda, obviously. I was least disappointed with Zelda.
That was awesome.
You know, a couple games that I played this year, I kind of have middling opinions about, Pokemon and Animal Crossing. They were, you know, really hyped games that sold a lot, and they're well-made games, but just various aspects about them just couldn't really hook me for a long time. Mm-hmm. I only played the beginning of Pokemon, and, you know, I only played Animal Crossing for a few weeks, and I guess I was disappointed that, particularly Pokemon, that it didn't, I don't know. It feels like many Pokemon games are pitched as being a step forward, like a really new experience, but they all feel like the same thing to me. So even though it's a good game and it's got lots of nice features to it, but I still just wasn't really inspired to collect them all. That's just me being crotchety, I guess. But,
okay.
So, I don't know if those would be really major disappointments, but I just couldn't get into those games.
Did you buy Pokemon, or did you, like, play a friend's?
I played a friend's copy.
Oh, okay.
So, I at least didn't have to spend the money on it.
Well, I will be able to extrapolate a little bit on Pokemon, because it's either for me in this category or in my top games of the year.
Whoa.
But which one?
I don't know.
Yeah, although it's a mystery. All right, good. Go on with your list of horrible experiences.
Okay. I will take a slight detour to a non-Nintendo game briefly. That would be StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm. It's the expansion to StarCraft II Wings of Liberty. I would, in a nutshell, Chris Metzen, who is the writer slash creative director of the StarCraft and many of Blizzard's titles, is a hack. Okay. And this story is absolutely terrible. Other things about the game are fine. I mean, the graphics are nice, and the music's pretty decent.
Is the gameplay balance pretty good still?
Not really. The StarCraft II gameplay overall has had some shortcomings that have really shown themselves in the last couple of years. Uh-huh. It's just not really holding up in terms of, I don't know, being an interesting competitive game. It's, I think, in if I were to say it in very general terms, the game has many... If you're playing competitively with another player, it's very easy to lose the game. Like, if you take a game like Advanced Wars or Fire Emblem or something else where, you know, you're playing against someone else, or Smash Brothers, it's always a flow to the game, like, or Dota. There's always, you know, okay, the game starts, everyone's on the same, you know, footing, and then it's where you go from there is really what's going to determine who wins the game, and there's lots of ups and downs, and people get an advantage, and someone else can have a comeback, and, you know, there's like a dynamic flow to a fun game. In a competitive setting. But in StarCraft, there's so many things you need to focus on that it's very easy to lose very quickly to something that you didn't predict or you just didn't.
Is it kind of easy to get like if there's like a point where the competition sort of shifts in favor of one player and there's no way to recover from that?
Essentially, yeah. And the thing is, there's a lot of ways for that situation to occur.
Oh, okay.
I just feel like there, for today's competitive gaming environment, I think it would benefit from a change to that, for something that would. A lot of fans actually want it to be more like the old game, the old StarCraft, but I think it would benefit from growing into something better. I think just as a design philosophy, I don't think they really have a good vision for the game, and that's really held it back from a gameplay perspective. That is what it is. I think the easier thing to criticize is the story, which is absolutely horrendous, and I think that they should be ashamed for putting that story in the game. I didn't think they could make a story worse than the first StarCraft II Wings of Liberty, but at least that one had some interesting characters and at least toyed around with something that could have been a good story. This one pretty much was the nail in the coffin for StarCraft's storyline. So, yes, that was very disappointing to me.
Oh, dang.
So, back to Nintendo, though. I think my biggest disappointment of 2013, because, honestly, I didn't expect much from Blizzard, so that wasn't really as disappointing as it was terrible. My biggest disappointment was probably Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon.
Oh, no!
Yes.
Mamma mia.
And I think that's because I expected great things, and I still do, from next-level games. Especially after Punch-Out, I'm excited about them as a studio. I think they really showed a lot of strength, many strengths that game. And I think what's most disappointing is that Luigi's Mansion has a lot of those strengths. It's just that in really one crucial way, it's just broken from a design perspective. It takes a lot of good elements such as, you know, fun mansion design, good graphics, good gameplay design, a lot of just an overall fine approach to the game, like having different mansions to explore and, you know, ghosts to capture and stuff to collect. You know, that's all you need to do to make it good, but they broke it down into this mission-based system that is nonsensical to me, and it removes any sense of exploration and discovery that you could really have. I mean, you explore a few rooms, and you're like, hey, this is pretty cool, and then it pulls you out of the game, sends you back into a slightly different set of rooms, and you're kind of re-exploring the same rooms again, but some of the secrets are different, so it's like, you don't even know. There's no consistency, there's no feel of like, yeah, I'm actually making progress, I'm actually, you know, doing things. It's a very... it's disjointed, and really removes what should have been the soul of the game, which should be like the exploration of these areas and, you know, a consistent progression. I think it was a really bad design decision that kind of sunk the game for me, and I think that's really disappointing.
Yeah, I have to say, I completely agree. Yeah, Luigi's Mansion is my number two on my list of two games.
Okay.
So Luigi's Mansion. Yeah, like you said, that mission structure really kind of brought things down, and it's weird. I feel like if they just had the mansions exist on their own with little save spots, or you could just pause and save, like, the game would have been much better, because you would have...
I agree.
You know, you would have been able to walk into a room and feel like you've cleared it out and stuff. You know, you look around, you solve puzzles. But the problem comes when you're looking for, like, these jewels or, like, the booze. You're exploring these rooms and you're solving these puzzles, and then, you know, there's no jewel or whatever in it. Then you come back in a later mission and you can still go to this room, and you have to go in there and, like, you'll solve the same puzzle and yank a curtain or something and the gem will come out. You know? Like, what's it doing there?
Yeah. So the fact that you've already been there.
The fact that this happens even once, I mean, it happens a lot more than once, but even if it just happened once, it has permanently set a bit of doubt in the player's mind that they have to look in every room, in every mission, on the off chance they might miss a jewel or a boo. And I think it's a kind of a lame mistake to make, you know? I feel like someone should have caught this, because otherwise, what the game does, it does, you know, it does really well. Like, the actually fighting the ghosts themselves is fun. You know, you have this sort of flashing thing. I think the multiplayer in the game is actually really good, too. Like, it's just based around the, you know, climbing this sort of randomly generated tower of ghosts and rooms and things. But yeah, just having that mission structure. And I think there's actually one other thing besides that really hurts the game. That actually works very poorly in conjunction with the mission structure, and that's the dark light element and the vacuuming like everything element. I feel like when I go into a new room, I have to vacuum everything and I have to use the dark light on everything. And for most of the puzzles, that's kind of how you solve them. So it feels a little one note, but to make things worse is that you'll the dark light for those that forgot or haven't played, reveals invisible things in rooms that you can't otherwise see. But, you know, it only covers a small area, so you basically have to go around the whole room and kind of comb it with the dark light. So what I would
do... It's kind of tedious, yeah.
Yeah, what I would do is I'd comb an area with the dark light, then I'd comb the area with the vacuum, and then, you know, I might find something, I might not, and then I'll go to the next mission, and I'll comb the area with the dark light, and it's like the same room from before, you know?
Yeah.
So after a while, this just kind of grated on me, and I get to the fourth mansion. I still want to beat the game, but I think I'm going to just give up on trying to find booze and gems and just kind of go through the game normally, because it I don't think it was designed well to be a... to be an explorative game, so sorry, Luigi. But yeah, like you said, Next Level Games does a lot of things really well. They did a lot of things really well with this game, and I look forward to seeing you know, what they do in the future.
Me too.
So, number one disappointment is gonna be Pokemon. Oh man, yeah. So the people mad at you about that Lucario crack are gonna don't worry, they're gonna come after me instead after saying Pokemon is the biggest disappointment. I bought Pokemon X on release date, and I got about 20 hours into it or so, around a little after the third gym, and I caught, like, I don't know, 60 Pokemon, a good amount. What this game did really well was it felt like I haven't played a Pokemon game since Gold and Silver, really. I haven't bought one because I haven't felt compelled to buy one because it doesn't, like, reading up on each sequel, it felt like it didn't really add enough. But when X and Y were revealed, and it's like, oh, finally have 3D battles and, like, animations and stuff, and effort is being put into this game, I was like, okay, they're definitely trying to make this, like, the next Pokemon, like, something really special.
Right.
So I kind of went in expecting that's what I was going to get. And the visuals are very well done. The music is actually surprisingly good. Like, it's got kind of this nice French sort of style to it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of songs. And I actually like the new Pokemon a lot. They're designed well in general. I think the fairy like new type is a good idea, helps with balancing, but I guess the core problem I think is just either I don't know if it's me or if it's Pokemon, but I just can't really get into the gameplay anymore. I felt like the core game was way too easy. All you really have to do for any battle is type match, and you'll win, and that's what I did for like the whole, like, I did that for three gyms. Nobody ever had more than three Pokemon on them. And they're almost always the same type. And I felt like I could just steamroll with, like, everything with this one type of Pokemon. And so it felt like there was no strategy or any challenge to the game itself. But then on the flip side, you have the online battling, where you'll fight people who've done, like, hundreds of hours of EV training and IV training and know all the tricks and stuff. And it's just, like, the only way to compete is to sink in a ton of work into the game. It felt like there was no middle ground. There was no... being able to enjoy the game while being reasonably challenged. And to make things worse, the game sort of throws all these things at you without ever explaining what they do. I still have no idea what benefits the Pokemon Ami does, what benefits the physical training does. It's just, it's very vague and unconnected, and you have to go look up everything. And I think that's dumb.
I agree.
The game should have an encyclopedia or something at your fingertips that has the type charts, that has, like, that has what these things, like, actually do. It, the Pokemon games always feel like you can't get the most out of them unless you go look up everything, which I think is really silly. I mean, why should we do that in the first place?
Well, I will make a slight objection to that just based on the past. I mean, remember when we were kids, you know, there was that excitement of, like, figuring things out on your own and hearing some sort of, you know, rumors about, like, how the game works from your friends. And there was that mystery to it that was kind of cool back then. But, you know, for the past 15 years, you've been able to look everything up online. And I think...
And it takes away something from it.
I think it does. I think if that wasn't part of reality, then... That, I don't think that would be such a flaw with the game, but I think you're definitely right that since that is a reality, you have to design the game to accommodate that. Like, you can't design it in a cryptic manner that, you know, has these core parts of the gameplay that are just not mentioned by the game. That is really a problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. That was kind of a better time. I mean, like it was a really cool, like, element of gameplay, and I think... quick side note, the game Retro Game Challenge on the DS really captures that element of gaming like really excellently. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that to you. Have I mentioned that game to you?
Yeah.
Like, you're a kid in the 80s playing a bunch of fake, like, NES games.
Right. We talked about it a few months ago, I think. It was a really cool game, but let me rephrase that. It looks like a really cool game, but I haven't played it.
Oh, yeah. But I think the problem... I don't think Pokemon X and Y really apply, because they kind of give you these things all from the beginning. Like, there's this... The whole bottom screen is taken up by Pokemon ME and by, like, exchanging things online and by the IV training. And it just doesn't, like, tell you what any of this stuff is. It's just like, blah, here it is, you know? It's not really like Chris Houlihan's secret room, or like, oh, what's that book in Mario Sunshine?
Right.
You know, what could that be? It's not really like a secret kind of thing. It's like just this core gameplay element that we're supposed to just... somehow, like, know what it does exactly. I don't know. It just... So, that... It was kind of a combination of the game being way too easy in the single-player mode, and, like, way too esoteric and just impossible to compete online, to where I couldn't really get any more enjoyment out of it. Beyond that, I think with RPGs, it's okay if they're easy, if you're doing, like, really interesting stuff, but, I mean, when you get down to it, you're still... It looks prettier, but you're still going through dungeons, you're going through towns, and everyone's dialogue is so bland. Everyone just talks about Pokemon. I love Pokemon. Aren't Pokemon great? And you have, like, this group of friends, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. You have, like, this group of friends finally.
Yeah.
You hang out with them.
That looked really cool at first.
Yeah, but the whole time, like, you have this, like, this chubby kid who looks awesome, because, like, nobody in Pokemon is ever chubby. But then all he talks about is, like, dancing and Pokemon moves, and Pokemon love to dance. He's like, I just love these moves. And he's like, come on, dude, don't you have, like, any aspect of a personality beyond this one trait? And so you have these two girls, and they pretty much each talk about, like, one thing, too. And I don't know, it could have been so much more. It feels completely un-Nintendo to me, like, the way the writing is.
Mm.
Which I think is because I don't think Nintendo internally develops these. I think GameCube is technically separate from Nintendo. Yeah. But the writing is just so, like, it feels like it's not quite as bad as 8-bit times, but it's like 16-bit kind of era. And not like Final Fantasy III good 16-bit RPG, you know? It's like, it just feels very basic, and nobody ever tells jokes or anything. It's just like, I don't know, it's just so blunt. And they're going to be starting on that camera in the city, which is, like, always...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a city... All right, anyway. So, I'm sorry, but it's got to be Pokemon X. I traded it in, guys. I felt bad.
You've presented a well-reasoned argument. I really can't argue with you.
I traded it in towards Donkey Kong, and Donkey Kong is fun. So, I'm afraid that's how it goes with... Oh, but on a lighter note, let's move on to our top games of the year.
Okay, I'm excited.
All right, I actually want to start with my number 5, because we haven't mentioned this yet.
Okay.
It's Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies.
Whoa.
Chris, did you ever get Phoenix Wright?
No, actually.
You're still deciding. You're still deciding.
Yeah, I still have that gift card. You know, I should probably just get that game, because I've heard good things about it. You've clearly recommended it, and I've really enjoyed the last 4 games, so...
Well, you know, I missed Phoenix Wright. Like, I feel like the last one we got was the Edgeworth game, which I didn't like very much. The edgy. So I really wanted more courtroom stuff. I wanted more Phoenix Wright. And honestly, I really like this game. There was some issues with the storytelling, I think, compared to the first 3 games. Just in that, I feel the murderers like the murders themselves are a little too convoluted and weird.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, the writing's really fun. The characters are really good. There's a couple standout cases that I really enjoyed, and actually the DLC case is really excellent. One of the best ones in the game. Yeah. There's five in the main game, and the DLC case.
Cool.
And just Phoenix Wright fans, I think would definitely like it. And the game moves to 3D really well, like way better than I expected it to. Like the expressions and the sprites and stuff, they're definitely using like some sort of, I don't know, squash and stretch or like replacing things or something. Whenever they animate, they replace the models with some different ones sometimes, which I think is a really good way to kind of get that snappy sort of over exaggerated approximation of the 2D sprite work in the game.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting art. Like, in the past, people have when companies have tried to remake something 2D and 3D, often it's the animations that make it look unnatural, because whereas in a sprite, you will instantly go between two frames. In 3D animation, they'll often just animate it. So instead of having a hand, you know, be down here, and then the next frame, the hand's all the way up on the head, the arm has to go all the way up or something. And things like that just make... They really change the appeal of the original 2D animation. So I think from what I've seen, they have... I would agree. They've done a really good job in translating it by using techniques such as that.
Yeah. So visually, it's very nice. The music's good, and... there are a lot of good twists and stuff. So it gets my number five. So moving on to number four, it's actually a lot of people's favorite game of the year. Super Mario 3D World. Not quite my favorite, but one that I felt was, you know, genuinely entertaining from start to finish. I remember being very aggravated at E3 time because of this game. And it didn't completely win me over, honestly. Like, it still feels... some people are going to get mad at me for this, but it still feels a little bit disposable in that I it doesn't stand out to me a ton. But when you get down to it, it's a Nintendo game that has unique ideas for every stage. It's really creative in the way it presents its levels. And the music's good, too. So I'm gonna go and give that my number four recommendation.
That's still pretty high praise. I certainly agree that... For me, at least, most of the Mario games of the past, I don't know, several years, aside from the Galaxy games, have felt kind of repetitive, and even though a lot of them are, you know, the levels are designed pretty well, I do like how pretty much every level has its own idea or its own, you know, mechanic to it. So from a gameplay perspective, it's still well designed, but I think the word disposable is honestly pretty accurate, just because... You know, you think back to the greatest Mario games, and each one is just like, you know, this grand adventure, not just like a big world to explore something, but even like the old, you know, like Mario World or Yoshi's Island, Mario 3, you know, like, it's just, the density of the greatness is so incredible.
I feel like they were pushing, those games were pushing technology and their systems to the limit.
Yeah.
Like, they felt big. Mario 3 felt enormous compared to NES games.
Totally, but then... Like,
and
these...
3D World does not feel enormous to me.
All the new Super Mario Brothers games, to me, have not felt enormous. They felt limited and constricted for some reason.
Well, I will say this about 3D World. I mean, it's by EAD Tokyo instead of whatever team is handling new Super Mario Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like a, you know, kind of between the quality of new Super Mario Brothers and Galaxy.
Okay.
So I would hesitate to lump it in with the new Super Mario Brothers games, even though it does kind of have some of those flaws.
No.
I feel in general it's more creative and more well done than those. And that's why I guess my number four.
Okay.
Number four. Okay. So number three is Pikmin 3, which I liked so much. I'm still playing it, actually. I got all the DLC. I'm trying to get platinums on everything. It's really demanding if you want to get the platinums in the little stages. You have to, like... do all this multitasking. I just love the multitasking.
That's cool.
It's just exciting. So not too much more to say about Pikmin 3. It was a little short in the one-player mode, but I think the mission mode is actually my favorite thing in the game, and just really fun to do. And good multiplayer.
Yeah, just real quickly, I think those are things that I would enjoy a lot about that game that I didn't actually experience. I played the story mode, but that was about it. So I think from your description, I would really enjoy that, because the story mode doesn't really encourage you to multitask a lot.
Not too much, unless you're going for like a personal high score.
Yeah, but I think I'll check that out when I can.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the main game is good, but it gives you plenty of juice in general.
Yeah,
So you don't have to worry too much about running out of time.
Right.
But yeah, try the missions. They're fun. Usually you're a little lost the first time you go through a mission, and then when you replay it right after that, it's like okay, I see how we can do here, blah 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 blah, and then it gets really addictive. So, all right. So people that have been paying attention could probably guess my top two, but in what order? Who knows? Let's go to Chris for his favorite games before we do that.
Okay. Let's see, my top five.
It doesn't have to be five.
Okay, well, my top games anyway. At the lower.
How about you give us your top ones, your top several in no particular order, and then your favorite one?
Okay, I can do that. Pikmin 3, I'd say, was on there. I think a couple other issues that I would raise with it were, I think the controls could have been better.
That's
particularly using the Wii U gamepad. It didn't really feel a good fit for that game. You know, when you have to switch back to the old Wii remote to play the game a little bit better, it just feels like I don't know. As one of the Wii U's first big games, I just would have hoped that it would have felt more natural to use the Wii U gamepad.
Yeah, no, that bothered me too. You should definitely. I think the Nunchuck and Wiimote are definitely the way to play with the gamepad as a map. But it is a little cumbersome, and it does feel a little weird playing a new game with the Wiimote.
Yeah, that's true. So as you said, I would really like to play the mission mode and the extra things in that game that I haven't experienced yet. But overall, a good game. I would also include Game & Wario on that list. I think it's a really creative game, like all the Wario games, really. But it's overall pretty polished. Multiplayer is really fun, and the games have pretty good replayability. Just go back to you now and then, and kill some time, do some puzzles, try to beat a high score, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really its main problem is it just didn't have enough mini games. If it had a handful more, I mean, heck, if it had twice as many, like I said, it would be a AAA title, and I think it would have gotten much better reviews, obviously. But then again, that's a lot more work, you know. It's like doubling the game,
Right.
But
what's there is very good.
Yeah, I think you can get it for $10 or $20. I totally recommend it. Fire Emblem, as we mentioned, is an incredible game. I think it did a really good job with the story and characters. I really like to see compelling characters that, I don't know, don't feel really stereotypical. I think a lot of games take these, character archetypes especially games, even some Fire Emblem games, I think, in the past, they'll stick in a character that, I don't know, it feels like you've seen them in some anime or some other game before. And
to be fair, I think a couple of my least favorite Fire Emblem characters kind of fall into that category. Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yeah, that's fair to say. I think for the most part, it avoids that.
And
You really start to be fond of the characters, and the way that the plot develops is fun. The world is well designed. I think it's obviously the music and graphics are great. I've always kind of wanted there to be more of a multiplayer aspect to Fire Emblem, and there never really has been. I mean, you can take your team and fight other people, but it's not really a compelling multiplayer design, I don't think. I don't know what you could do exactly, but I just feel like there could be some cool multiplayer there. The similarity in the gameplay to Advance Wars makes me think maybe they could adopt something like that. I mean, in Advance Wars, you obviously construct units, but heck, maybe you could do that with Fire Emblem. Like, maybe you don't have characters, but you have, a Pegasus and whatever.
Okay.
So I think if they had some feature like that, there could be some pretty good replayability. Because I personally loved Advance Wars as multiplayer. I think one thing that series did really well, not to get off on too much of a tangent, but it had the super meters that powered up when you lost a battle, really. So, like, it gave the person who was kind of on his back foot, they gave that person, an extra power to get him back into the game. So, I think that was a really good mechanic that that made the flow of the battles interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of like what I was saying with my talk about StarCraft earlier, I think I think that sort of mechanic, like to give the person who's losing a little more of an upper hand, can kind of keep the battles interesting till the very end.
Yeah.
Kind of like in Street Fighter. In Street Fighter, you get the ultra meter building when you take a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. So it always gives you a... And then if you can use that successfully, it deals more damage than if, you know, if they had lower health. So the further behind you are, the more powerful it is.
Yeah, it's a little bit of auto-balancing there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I think having those kind of mechanics will make a game interesting to the very end rather than, you know, someone wins one of the battles and then the other players are like, well, I can't win now. I just got to give up, which happens in StarCraft. And I think that's something I really liked about Advance Wars, that if they just put a multiplayer mode in Fire Emblem like Advance Wars and just made it a little more Fire Emblem-y, personally, I think that'd be really fun.
Cool.
Anyway, there were a few other like PC games I really enjoyed. I will just mention one that I thought was really interesting, called Papers, Please.
I saw a trailer for that. How is it?
It's really cool. It's essentially a game where you play a border crossing guard in this kind of Soviet Russia-styled country. It's kind of like there's all these countries that have recently split apart, and there's like a burgeoning civil war between two of them. So you have to evaluate applicants to enter the country, and the rules constantly change. So at first you're just looking for passports, then you're looking for passports and entry permits, and then all these other things develop. And it's presented in a very simple way where you're just the guard at the crossing booth. But it's an interesting story, and it kind of makes you reflect a lot on interesting issues and themes that, you know, relate to real life. And it makes you think, and it makes you feel. And it's a really good game that I think is a really nice example of really the renaissance of indie games these days, where just a couple people can make a brilliant game, which hasn't really been possible in a long time. So
that's cool. I've actually wanted to try that out. Is that for sale, or is it like a free game, or?
It's like $10, I think, on Steam.
It's on Steam. Okay.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but I mean, it's playable on, Macs and PCs, I believe. So, it's definitely worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And it's also another good thing about this and a lot of other indie games that I've been interested in is that it doesn't take a lot of time to play. Like, you can beat it in, you know, a couple hours. It's not really the sort of game where you have to, you know, like, it's not like Pokemon or Animal Crossing, or particularly Pokemon, where it's asking you to grind and, you know, do all this level up and all this stuff. So yeah. I think for me, in this era of my gaming days, I really appreciate a game that can do what it's aiming to do in a relatively concise period of time without stuffing it with less than revolutionary and exciting gameplay.
So it's a tightly designed kind of game.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt about SteamWorld Dig, actually. Kind of sets out to do one thing and then it does it really well, and it, you know, takes a few hours and that's it.
But that's really cool. I hadn't even heard of that before you mentioned it, so I'm going to look into that. That sounds like a neat game.
Okay. Unfortunately, I think it was on sale last week for 50% off on the 3DS shop. So I got it for $4.50 instead of $9.
Cool.
But, it sounds like you enjoyed Papers, Please in a similar way. You know, it's like something that, it's sometimes nice to have just a short game that knows what it's doing and is well-paced. And it's just like, you know, that was a good experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. That's pretty much most of my top games. I have probably one more game I'd want to mention, but, where do you want to take it from here?
Well, I guess I will say my number two, and then we'll have our number one.
Okay.
All right, so my number two game, it really came between this and number one, and I couldn't figure it out for a couple weeks, because I like both of them so much, but for slightly different reasons. But at the end of the day, I'm going to have to go with Fire Emblem Awakening in number two. So, Fire Emblem was a series that I've never really been into, but, you know, we based our first podcast around it, and, in short, I liked it. So, yeah, I mean, it did a lot of things well. I'm looking forward to future Fire Emblem games, and I think this one was kind of, from what I've read, is the last hurrah of Fire Emblem. Like, they wanted to put everything in this, because if it didn't sell well, it would basically mean the end of the series. So, I'm glad that didn't happen. I'm glad I was able to support it. Because it's a spectacular game. There's a lot to do. There's great characters. There's nice strategic gameplay. And I just really enjoyed it from beginning to end. And I got Sarah to play it. She got kind of frustrated sometimes. But, you know, she liked it a lot, too. I love how you can have these character relationships, these marriages, pass things on to the kids. And it feels kind of like, you know, it's a little weird because Pokemon has some of these elements. Like, it has sort of that customization thing. It has the breeding thing. But I just felt more into it with Fire Emblem because I like the characters and the writing a lot more. I like the core gameplay. It felt more strategic to me. And I know they're different genres, but it's sort of weird how one of my top games and my most disappointing game do have several of those similarities, and I think that's kind of what made Fire Emblem stand out a lot to me. So, Fire Emblem Awakening, my number two game, and really one of the best games on the system. Actually, might be my third favorite game on the system. Okay, yeah, one of the best games on the system. So yeah, try it out even if you haven't played Fire Emblem before. There's plenty of you know, little tutorials and stuff to get you into it, and there's kind of an easier mode if you desire to have an easier mode. So I think we could probably say our number one at the very same time then, Chris.
I think we can, yes.
So, the Brawl in the Family top game of 2014 is
The Legend of Zelda! A Link Between
Worlds! That was great.
Yeah, that's priceless right there.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk Zelda. Oh, wait,
it's great.
Let me give you some backstory, because everyone likes an underdog. This game looked like it was gonna be super lame.
It did. I was kind of scared of it at first.
When they showed this at the Nintendo Direct, I was like, okay, I guess that'll be alright.
It's like new Super Zelda Brothers.
Yeah, new Super Zelda. It's like, okay, I guess this can... I don't know. But inside I was like, oh man, what are they doing? This is going to be like freaking Phantom Hourglass.
It's going to continue the negative tradition of handheld Zelda games, which has been disappointing since Link's Awakening.
Sorry, Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks fans. I will say I like the flagship Zeldas.
Yep. No!
No! Look, I like... Alright, the Link's Awakening, though, was the king. I think we can all agree there. But, when this game came out, it was like, you know what? You don't have any faith in me, but I'm going to prove you wrong. Because I was reading up and I was like, okay, it's like a kind of a sequel, but not really. It feels like this game was like made, like they were trying to make a remake of Link to the Past and they just turned into this semi-sequel.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, this is going to be cheese balls. But then then the game came out and everyone loved it. So I went to buy it and I loved it too. That was the short version, but...
Yeah, I was actually surprised. I mean, knowing... I'm a big Zelda fan. I do admit to have been disillusioned in the past number of years, but I bought this game before you did, as I recall, and you were surprised at how much I was enjoying it, and so was I, really.
From the moment when you first control Link, it's like, whoa, it's really fluid for starters.
Yeah.
Like Link is moving fast, you know, like he's booking it, and it just like the combat feels really good, and the music is like excellent. And the design of the game is really good, but I think what really did it for everyone was the lack of tutorials.
It was brilliant. Like
it was amazing. Remember how we were talking about like the stupid things going above your head, and it goes broom, and they add it to your inventory.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do that here. It's like everything is like doesn't nothing treats the player like they're an idiot. You know, they just let you go. They're like, all right, here's you know the backstory. Here's your sword. Go off and explore Hyrule. Have fun.
It's amazing how that's all they needed to do. Like, I am very hopeful that this wasn't, like, a mistake on their part. That, like, Nintendo actually realizes that was a good design decision. Because it's been a critical flaw of recent Zelda games. And I think this game really proves how important it is to strip all that away. And just put the player in the world and let them...
I mean, Aonuma beforehand was you know, in interviews and stuff, he was like, yeah, we want to try to change up the Zelda formula a little bit and make it a little more open-ended. And I was thinking, yeah, right, you know, we've heard that line before.
Yeah, we have.
You know? But then the game came out, and it's like, whoa, it kind of is. Like, I mean, it's not Zelda 1 levels of non-linearity, but it feels appropriate, and it feels like I'm really doing stuff, like, on my own. Especially with the whole Ravio system where you rent items out from the shop. You know, you could pretty much rent those in whatever order you want, and then your main upgrades kind of come from finding those little squid things and getting the really good items. So, I mean, there's stuff to spend your rupees on. There's, like, secrets and things everywhere that you can kind of find right from the beginning. It just feels really refreshing to play a game, a Zelda game, where you can do dungeons out of order and you can explore the world at your own pace. And, you know, there's barely any cutscenes, but the ones that are there are, like, surprisingly good. Like, the story and characters were really well done.
They really were. I was surprised. Even when I first started playing the game, I'm like, Ravio, okay, there's got to be some dumb character in here. I just seem like kind of a goofy little nothing character, but then they actually develop him well. Like, I really liked how the characters came together at the end. Yeah. They start off with just little tidbits of character, mm-hmm. which then grow into something that actually is interesting and gives you some sort of emotional connection, and I thought it was pretty much perfect in terms of how that worked.
And there was, you know, this emotional core to the story that I thought was really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some game developers are starting to learn that having some gray, like morally gray situations, or not having a villain who's pure black, you know, is a lot more interesting than the opposite.
And I feel like, you know, it would be easy to overblow this a little bit, but I feel like the game kind of had the perfect amount of story and content while still giving you all this non-linearity. I think it was a really good balance.
Yeah, I agree. It was really beautiful.
It was really beautiful. Yeah, it's nice seeing Zelda kind of embrace that again. I think the past couple games, you know, there are good elements to the story, but there's a little too much of it, you know? It feels a little overindulgent. Mm-hmm. And especially at the beginning part, you know, we don't really need, like, a ton of backstory. And in this game, it's basically, okay, we learn that Link is, you know, like, he's an apprentice for a blacksmith, you know, and there's a few interesting characters that, you know, that you get to know. Oh, that was another thing I really liked, like, the whole sage thing.
Yeah.
Like, you get to know all of them before they become sages. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah.
So then when you're saving them, it feels like, okay, now I finally saved, you know, so-and-so. You know, you kind of feel good about that. It's not just like a reward at the end of a dungeon, you know? Yeah. Not just like an item to get. So, I mean, there's really a ton of things that I really liked about this. The whole Mai Mai system, I liked how the upgrades worked. That was really surprising. Mm-hmm. I liked the Street Pass actually has a really cool little element to it. What are some other things? A lot of the writing was really good and funny and creative. Mm-hmm. Shoot, man, like it actually improved on a lot of things from Link to the Past, which really surprised me. I thought it was going to be a step down. The music was splendid, and yeah, that, like we said, the characters in the story were a big improvement.
Yeah, and what would you say about the way that rupees were used in the game? Because that's really been a weakness in some previous Zelda games, where, you know, you have a few things to spend rupees on, but then you just fill up your wallet and, you know, you never really...
Yeah, you start, I think it should be mentioned that you start with a full, not a full wallet, but the biggest wallet. There are no wallet limits. So you can carry 9,999 rupees from the beginning. And for the most part, you're always going to be spending them on stuff. I think the very, the last maybe couple hours of the game, I ran out of stuff to buy. But until then, the game did a really good job of you know, making me excited to find more rupees, because it means more items and more... some other little bonuses that you can get.
Yeah, that makes a lot of the puzzles continually fun to complete. Because so you have a puzzle, like those little treasure hunter puzzle rooms, which is if you're still looking for rupees, it still makes the reward, you know, kind of exciting. But in another Zelda game, if you don't need rupees, you're like, why would I want to do this puzzle? I don't need rupees, you know? So.
Yeah, It gives more, it just, the playing the game as a whole feels more rewarding. They do a really good job at portioning out these things just out of reach to where, you know, you want to keep playing to get the next thing. And, I mean, even like the overworld, even though it was reused from Link to the Past, they put enough interesting stuff in it and have enough little spins on it to keep it, for the most part, feeling pretty fresh.
I agree. Another interesting thing I think they did was the whole... with like the energy system for your item usage, what do they call it? The stamina meter, or
stamina meter. See, that's another. I keep forgetting all these awesome things. Like, the stamina meter is
It was perfect.
Awesome.
I think it took out the mechanic of collecting items to, like, you know, build up your stock mm-hmm. of bombs and arrows and whatever, but I didn't miss that at all. I thought it made it so you have to conserve your usage of things in a, you know, you can't rapidly do something a million times in a row, but it's still, it keeps you yeah. from getting stuck without something you need, and I think collecting the bombs and stuff kind of proved to be a little bit unnecessary. So this was just a more cohesive way.
There were a lot of things that I thought the stamina meter suddenly just fixed
yeah.
with one fell sweep. With one fell sweep. One fell, is it a sweep that you, like you could sweep something.
Swoop.
I think it's a noun. One fell swoop.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those things, like you said, you know, you don't get stuck anywhere, but I think it also let them build dungeon designs around, like, bombs, for instance,
yep.
without having to worry about the player running out of bombs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most importantly, it let players actually use their weapons. Like, I would never use my bow in a lot of these games because I was like, I know I probably wasn't going to run out of arrows, but I was always a worry that I'd be like, oh, what if I really need arrows and I don't have any because I used them all. So it was like a subconscious thing. Like, I wouldn't use the bow unless I had to. Or I wouldn't use bombs unless I had to.
Yeah.
In this game, I'm just like, I'm using everything. I'm using fire rods, using ice rods because, you know, why not? And
yep.
like you said, it's still balanced because you still you have a limit technically. You can't spam it. But it encourages players to use these as tools alongside their sword, and it works, like, super well for the combat.
I completely agree. Because even the old, in Link to the Past, or other Zelda games, you have the magic meter. You still have to collect things to recharge that, you know? So
that
still led you to conserve instead of just enjoying the items you have, which...
Yeah, yeah. I always felt like, you know, you feel a little guilty when you use your item.
Yeah.
When you're using up stuff, so... Yeah. That was an excellent addition, and I don't know, just everything came together with this game. The only thing I think that would make it better is if they somehow had a fully original world, but still had the same, like, really good pacing and secrets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was really the only thing that bothered me was kind of, I would have loved to see, like, a completely fresh overworld. And,
yeah.
Oh, that and I think some of the visual things I think could have been tweaked a little bit. But everything else was phenomenal. Like, everybody that's been a Zelda fan, especially those that haven't liked the, you know, maybe the past few, really need to go try this out, because it works so well.
I completely agree, and I can only hope that the new Wii U Zelda will take a page from this game and kind of...
Yeah.
Strip away some of the fat and get down to what makes Zelda great again.
Yeah, less cinema, more exploration, and just, you know, the joy of going on an adventure. That's what this series is all about.
Absolutely.
All right, well, it sounds like we're on the same page with the big number one, so I think that might be the end of our Brawl in the Family 2013 awards. Yeah. I wouldn't be a very good MC at, like, the Oscars or anything.
I don't know. I think he might be the best MC at the Oscars.
Oh, yeah, I might do better than Seth MacFarlane. He was last year's, and, like, he made everyone uncomfortable.
He's good at that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's made a living off of it. So.
Yeah, it's kind of his thing. So.
That's his thing. He's made millions from it. All right.
Yep.
So I guess that'll wrap it up then, guys. We'll be back to a normal podcast next time around where we'll... talk about, you know, comic talk and the game of the current time period, the month or something. I don't know.
And hopefully we'll do it again. We'll do it sooner than this one.
Like, yeah. Sorry about this one being a little late. A lot of things came up, and
yep.
I had to finish some stuff. But yeah, that'll wrap it up for this installment. So thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Matthew,
and I'm Chris,
and we'll see you later.